Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, the fabulous, the fluoridated, the Fukushima irradiated, the incredibly corrupt, and goodness knows it's green and clean, except for the political system. Although it is green, sometimes it's certainly not clean. My very special guest today is a specialist in the, general scumbaggery of the New Zealand ilk, might I say. The postmaster at the Deadline Gazette, Ben Vidgen.
Good afternoon, Vinnie. That's Ben Vidgen speaking to you from Otago, where the beautiful people are.
It sounds like you're speaking in a Transylvanian accent. Is that some kind of like Otagoan dialect?
It's just what we do when we've had a few beers the night beforehand.
Oh, yeah. It does happen, actually. Sensitivity to sunlight.
I've definitely got a lot of that today.
Yeah. And also, churches don't seem fond of you coming into them, you know. It's interesting.
Well, churches just don't seem fond of me, full stop. In fact, mind you, there's a lot of people that are out there that don't seem fond of me, but, you know, it's what you get. It happens when you rattle cages.
Yeah, well, it's what you get when you don't compromise who you are in order to make everybody else feel comfortable with their stupid little lives that they built up around themselves for decades and decades without even thinking about what it means.
Well, it's quite interesting. Like, the other day I was walking down the main street of Dunedin, which is Princes Street, and I had about four or five of my long-term clients have been advertising me for about 11 years. And, you know, the general theme of the conversation was, well, Ben, you know, you polarise a lot of people, and you know you're not the most diplomatic person out there. But we like you because you actually, you know, you walk the talk, and you don't care what people think about you. And I don't. You know, I've been doing my paper down here in Otago for 11 years. Many have come, many have gone. I'm still here. I'm doing my own thing, and I'm not changing.
Well, you know, you can't argue with what works.
No, well, you can't. And it's amazing how many, like, you know, the big boys out there see what I'm doing and think, oh, we want that advertising, we want it all. And they try and duplicate it, but they never quite understand it. You know, it's like, if I looked at what my hourly rate was, I'd scare myself stupid. You know, I don't run an office cost. I don't run a big staffing, so I can get away with what I'm doing. So that's why I'm still here. But these other ventures keep on wanting to, you know, the big flash cars and the big office and the thing. They just don't work it out. That's, you know, not the way to survive in this day and time.
Well, not if you're telling the truth anyway. If you want to BS people and commit fraud and everything like that and crime, mate, you'll be richest beyond the wildest dreams. But if you want to be honest, ethical and what have you, it basically comes down to the amount of hard work and integrity you put into it.
Pretty much all. And that's, you know, that's at the end of the day why I survive, because I'm, you know, I may not necessarily say anything that people agree, but I have my own code of ethics, and I stick to it, and 11 years later I haven't changed it, and people know that they can consistently rely on what I'm doing. You know, financially, we've got things like the stadium project down here, which was one of these things which I wrote about and said, don't do it, it's a huge white elephant, it's going to cost you hundreds of millions of dollars. We were told by all the people in suits that, oh no, we were just the riffraff and we didn't know what we're talking about, and they were rich and powerful, so we should listen to them. And they built the stadium, $500 million later, and we're paying for it, and we're paying for it, and we're paying for it. And, you know, I've been proved correct, but in the meantime, I've had all my advertising with the council axed because they perceived my stance to be anti-council when all I was doing was my job, whereas other larger papers have turned around and basically told the people of Dunedin that this is a great thing and got all that council money. And, you know, 10 years later, now the facts of the roosters have come home, but they're still getting their advertising.
Is it always this way, or more to the point, has it always been this way with advertising revenue and what have you? Because I've only really just started picking up advertisers just recently to any extent, and I'm doing no contracts or anything like that. These are just good people who support what I do and basically want to give me a bit of money but aren't prepared to just donate it for absolutely nothing.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, it's an interesting thing from a journalist viewpoint. When I started my paper 11 years ago, I had the opinion that journalists are most important and advertising was like the advertising schmam advertising. 11 years later, I realized that, you know, for my paper to survive, my advertising actually has to actually work. But then you get down to the issue of what's your editorial stance. And the conventional view on television, on radio and other print media is that don't do anything controversial because it'll scare away the advertisers and you can't survive. And well, it's actually not the case. You know, I have lawyers, I have top market art galleries, top market restaurants, cafes. They've all been advertising for me for 11 years. Nobody's not come into their store and said, well, we won't do business with you because you appear in postman. In fact, they just recognise that I've got a good, strong brand that's picked up and recognised that people like what I'm saying. I never have any copies left of my publication when I go and do my next issue because, again, it gets picked up. So the living proof that you can actually treat people intelligently and it will actually work. The tricky thing is, you know, there are the status quo, the people such that run the council, the people that want to support things like the stadium, which would cost our city, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. Those people, I can't get their advertising revenue because I get in the way of doing what they want to do mostly, which is rip off the rest of the people in Dunedin and but go, we're in suits, so we must be respectable. It's you always have to make a choice. Like, if you could put up, I mean, there was another publication in Dunedin that came along. It was based on exactly my format. They were doing everything that I was doing, except for they were took the attitude of they took away the politics and they just showed students with their bums on the front page that this would be cool because that's what people wanted to hear. Well, that publication lasted 8 months before it fell over. I mean, they had a bigger budget than me and the rest of it, but at the end of the day, people didn't want their product associated with crap, you know? So draw your own conclusions.
Yeah. I mean, I can probably make the same argument just for my my YouTube channel and video presence. I mean, 5 years, 5,000 videos, and I've got 14,000 subscribers. The New Zealand Herald that's been around for 10 years on YouTube that has tens of thousands of videos only has like 8,000 subscribers now. So and that's the leading mainstream media YouTube channel in New Zealand. The New Zealand Herald website is the fourth or the eighth most followed website in New Zealand overall, and I'm beating them on their YouTube channel by my frickin' self. See, it gives true testament to exactly the point you're trying to make here, Ben. People value what's freaking real well over what's manufactured and packaged and basically had all the truth and all the juicy details beaten out of it so you don't offend anybody that can think.
Well, you know, give an example. Before I come to an example, I'll say something about TV media. Is that what tends to happen when they are putting on programs for TV is that the marketing people will turn around and they'll say, don't put that program on because it scares away the advertisers and that's what it's all about. Well, the reality is what they do is they take a good program and they put it on at a bad time frame, like 11 o'clock nighttime or so on, and of course there's not enough people there to watch it. So they say, see, this doesn't work. Let's go back to buying reality TV, which normally, you know, a reality program is about one-tenth the price of a documentary. So, in fact, they can do is buy 10 reality programs for the price of one documentary, put them on a prime TV, and because that's when people tend to turn on the TV, they say, this is what people actually want. It's not what people want. It's what they've done to massage the demographics to get the results that they want so that they can maximize their profit. On the other hand, they once put on a docu drama called Edge of Darkness about the nuclear... it was based on sort of nuclear thriller in England. They put it on at 7 o'clock on Saturday evening, prime television, about 1995, well, actually a little bit earlier than 1990. What actually happened was the series was so popular that by sheer numbers, the television station had to turn around and rerun the program because people actually were really into it. So that the purpose of that example is to show you that when you put on a good product that does actually appeal to people's intelligence and make them think, they will respond. So, you know, we often get led on, oh, people aren't into documentaries, they aren't into serious in-depth television. Well, it's not. It's the way that material is massaged for the purposes of making them be able to be put out cheap product to get the maximum return on their advertising. So they're actually selling the audience short, and ultimately they're actually selling themselves short because even TV numbers are now going down because people are transferring instead to YouTube channels like yourself or other sources of information.
Yeah, you know, they're really putting themselves out of the job, and I think that's what makes our job so much easier is because we can just cover what they don't, which means we can cover anything, and in fact, we do.
Yeah, pretty much all, and you know, and it's quite interesting. Again, I do a bit of social media. We're only really just starting to get into that role, but I find that I can sell advertising in that area very, very, very well, simply because A, I've got good content, and people are interested in what I have to say. B, I've taken the time to actually understand how social media works when most of these people are still working to old school formulas. see, just because of the fact that I understand that we're not, you know, we're no longer in a world where it's your advertising is just based on putting out a newspaper. I mean, my publication is multimedia. We do radio. I do a show on Wednesday nights, 8:30 on 105.4 FM Otago Access Radio. The show is podcast that goes on my website. The website has my social media embedded into the website. My website is www.postmanproductions.org. It is actually down for maintenance, so it'll be up next week, so you can go and actually have a look at it. But I also turn around, I use YouTube, and I use print, and I use all these things, combine them together so they feed off each other. The end result is I'm actually putting out a product that's got lower costs, for lower costs than a lot of these big boys are getting bigger numbers. Yet, I charge a lot less. I have good content, and I retain my advertisers.
Yeah. And I think this is actually one of the important relationships that needs to be understood between mainstream print media and the new media that we're kind of running here, is that the advertisers that we take on aren't people who go with the flow all the time and are always worried about this, that, or the other ramifications. What they care about is truth, and they actually have a moral obligation to ensure that truth keeps getting out, because I think they understand, some of them at least, that without truthful media reporting and people to back those people who do it and give up their time and effort to do so, you won't be in business for very long without somebody else coming over and swiping it through Ford.
Yeah. Well, I've got about 25% of my advertisers are what I would probably actually call patrons. They're advertising with me, not necessarily because they're interested in the results, but they're advertising me because they like what I'm doing. And when they look around what their options are, they see that they're giving money to media that are actually, you know, not reporting on things which are actually relevant to them in terms of rates, council issues. Whereas they see that I've actually, you know, go out there and I do the job. I actually have impact, and I'm quite often quite stunned. I mean, you know, it's what I'm very good at setting media landmines. I can put a topic out there and then the other media guys will pick up on it. But I'm really good at rattling the cages. But I have 75% of my advertisers, however, are people that they're not advertising me because they're actually interested in the truth. What they are actually interested in is they're interested in A, my numbers, and B, they're interested in the fact that I can reach out to a whole variety of demographic. Whereas other people are turning around, like, you know, one particular group of people, they represent a consortium, which I also have interest in. This consortium, I have about 11 of their clients, which I consistently advertise for 11 years. They themselves, who are made up of trust and are very tied up with the establishment, they refuse to advertise me because they say I'm not conservative enough. Now, all of their own clients are my clients because they know I get results, but they don't want to be seen advertising me because they're afraid that they won't get council grants or they won't get this. So they're not saying they're advertising me because I don't do the job. They're saying they're advertising me because they're afraid that I'll upset their position in society. They get sucked into the old school rule of thinking that somehow if you say something that's controversial that you'll lose clients or you'll upset the outcome. You don't. All you do is you actually draw new clients and people go, well, hey, why is this guy so polarizing? Why is he so controversial? I better pick him up and see what he's got to say. And I've got one client, he's a very, very conservative gentleman, and the first time I walked in and saw him, and I said to him, like, he said, oh, I know your publication, that bunch of rubbish, I read it religiously. And I like that, because what he does is he's him and his mates sit down, they read my newspaper, they rubbish it, they say what a bunch of bollocks it actually is, and they have a long discussion over the beer for about 2 or 3 hours, and then they can't wait till next month because they know that I'll give them something else to talk about. That's all I'm trying to do. I'm not trying to preach the truth. I'm just trying to give people interesting information from a different perspective so that they can turn around and judge for themselves whether or not what I'm saying is true or whether maybe they should reevaluate the other sources of information they're getting.
I think this is probably one of the principal differences between you and me, Ben, is that you've actually got credibility and you actually maintain a lot of work in order to ensure that you retain credibility. I claim to have none, and in so doing, I'm quite credible because I'm not lying to people.
Well, it's an interesting issue of credibility because, you know, I've turned around and I've done reported on HAARP, High Altitude Atmospheric Research program. It's possible links to the earthquakes in Christchurch. And I'm very categorically saying, look, I'm not saying that this has caused the earthquakes in Christchurch, but my research of this technology says that A, it exists, and B, when it's used, it will create certain symptoms which we can find in large numbers in relation to correlate and to Christchurch. So there is a correlation. So it is not crazy to consider it. We should be treating this as a serious subject for debate. Now, on the surface, I have people turn around and they put things up on Facebook. Oh, he's crazy. He thinks that Christchurch was caused by HAARP, which is actually not what I said at all. But they'll say that. But then I can walk into a table of journalists, as I did recently in Queenstown, and there were people from Radio New Zealand, TV3, TV1, a couple of local media print guys. They all knew who I was. They all turned around and said, oh, yeah, I remember when you were giving Winston Peters a hard time at the Otago Foreign Policy School. And these guys give me credibility because they recognise and they've followed me for a long time that I do get results and that I normally am a little bit, you know, ahead of the field because I will take risks. They like what I do because I do things that they can't do. I can take the risk, which, if they brought those stories to the editors, they'd be seen a don't come Monday notice. So I get credibility in the right circle, and I get people who, whether it's organised crime or council issues, that are in the know, they listen very poignantly to what I'm saying. There may be people out there that don't like what I'm saying, so they'll go, oh, he's a conspiracy theorist. But you know what? They've been saying that for 11 years. In fact, they've been saying it longer than I've been, you know, working as a journalist for 20 years. I've got a 20-year track record of breaking stories well in advance of my colleagues, and hindsight has always proved me right. The only one that hasn't at the moment is HAARP, because that's the current thing that I've actually been reporting on. But, you know, I'd say watch your space. In 5 or 10 years' time, we'll actually acknowledge happily that, yes, this is now mainstream, that there are geo weapons. But, you know, you've got to take people like me that are willing to say, look, I'm not going to follow what the conventional line is, that are willing to take that football to put it on the field to begin with before you've actually got a football you can kick around. And that's what I've been doing all my life as a journalist, picking subjects that were not originally on the field, bringing them onto the field. I kick them as far as I can, and eventually the rest of the scrum joins in, picks them up and runs with them. But, you know, no one ever turns around and says, oh, yeah, you're the guy that did that. So you just have to shrug and get on with it and pick up the next football. And you know, hindsight is your greatest power, because people can say, what are they like now? As I said, I've got 20 years of stories that I've broken to show the fact that I know what I'm talking about and I do have good results. That's where my credibility comes from.
Well, and this is where the hear no evil, see no evil argument comes from. Ben Vigent has never been correct about anything, really. How about this, this, and this? Oh, those aren't real articles. Those don't have any credibility. Oh, really? So have you read them? No, I haven't read them or anything like that. So you openly admit that you don't know what you're talking about, and you're accusing somebody of something which you have no evidence for because you won't look for any evidence of it.
People want to grab onto what they know, and it's very hard for them to shift from that status. But you know, the reality is, I'm one of the first guys to ever report about the fact that New Zealand SAS were on active duty well before the Iraq War, and that they've been doing this, you know, since Vietnam. When officially we were told that they hadn't been out there since Vietnam, we now know that that's not true. I was one of the first guys to report on organised underage prostitution in Christchurch. We now know that that's now, you know, a matter of fact. I was one of the first guys to report about New Zealand's involvement in the private military contract industry. We now know that's true. I was one of the first people to report about the role of arms falling into the Pacific that were having a destabilizing influence. I reported this and predicted the Solomons, PNG, and Fiji coups 2 and 3. You know, I've been doing this all my life, basically going out there, talking to the information, collecting the documentation, verifying it, putting it out there, whether it's not popular at the time to do it, being gunned down or ignored by my colleagues or by people who don't want to hear what I'm saying. And as then I say, you know, events come along, for example, like South Canterbury Finance in 2006, my second book, State Secrets 2, you know, I went into the building and I looked at all the businesses involved and did a big, huge, detailed chapter about what a dodgy company outfit this actually was. People go, no, South Canterbury Finance, Alan Hubbard's awesome, it's great. And well, the building, the South Canterbury Finance fell over 5 years later. Everything that I was saying came out in the wash. And, you know, that's what I've been doing all my life, collecting the information, not letting myself be pushed around by what is the accepted convention or by what I know is, you know, going to make me popular, putting it out there anyway. And lo and behold, because I've actually researched my subject properly, I've checked my facts, the events unfold, and hindsight is my greatest power. And it's the one that I always go back to. And everyone gives me a hard time. I say, well, you can give me a hard time about this story, but what about this story? And as you see, what normally tends to happen is that they don't actually debate the subject matter or the content. They want to try and point fingers at you and attack the messenger.
Yeah. But, you know, crack a straw man out, you know, something like that. Oh, this one tiny little insignificant thing 10 years ago, blah, 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 that you weren't 100% correct on, only 99%. I'm going to focus on that 1%, and that's the reason why 100% of everything you've ever done for your entire life is wrong.
Well, you know, it's the only problem with them doing that is that up until, I said with the HAARP situation, it's a bit difficult because we've yet, there's more information needs to come out to vindicate it. I'm on the edge right now, so it'll take a bit of time before the other stuff comes along. But, you know, apart from that story, there isn't a story that I can actually think of that I've ever reported on which actually hasn't actually proved to be correct. You know, I've been reporting about GCSB's links to the NSA. I've done that for 20 years. I've reported about the nominee shareholders that this has created a loop for money laundering. I report and had links to arms trafficking and terrorism. I reported on this. I reported on this from 1999, and it took up until 2008 for the rest of the mainstream media to actually catch up with me and say, "Well, actually, nominee shareholders are causing this problem. Yes, it's correct." And what was the response? It was John Key is going to carry out an investigation and look into it. That was the end of the story. We've never heard any more about it, but doesn't matter. It's now actually accepted. We now know that actually that is a fault. It just happens to be one fault that nobody wants to do anything about.
Can you explain the term gatekeeper to me in the media sense of the word?
I do know what you're talking about, but it's not one I know directly about. You know, the way I interpret a gatekeeper is someone that actually controls the flow of information, and he's the one that effectively decides what you'll see on your 6 o'clock news or your front page of your mainstream newspaper. It's that situation where TV3 runs with a story, then you can guarantee that TV2, TV1, the ODT are going to publish it the next day. If they don't run with a story and it only appears in, I don't know, my publication, the Postman Gazette, you may find it may take quite some time for that story to actually appear because that's not what the people who are controlling the system want you to hear. It's, you turn around, you take the story to John Campbell, you don't just pick up a phone and talk to John Campbell directly. You've actually got to go through a whole series of flunkies whose entire job is to check you to make sure that you're not going to bring any information that's actually going to cause TV3 problems down the road. And if they think that you are going to be a problem to them or take something away from them, well, your news won't get to John Campbell. It'll get stopped beforehand. He won't even know that story exists. You'll be sitting there grinding your teeth wondering why this really important story didn't come out. You know, on the other hand, the contrast is, you look at like something like the Occupy movements, which they were showing people walking into main buildings in the United States, and I think it was up to about a year and a half in huge numbers on social media that people were seeing clips of these things, events occurring. It took a year and a half for the mainstream media to actually finally acknowledge that this event was occurring. It was only because the numbers became so overwhelmingly large that they actually had to acknowledge that this was occurring because they were starting to look like absolute dicks, you know. I was saying, pretending that I know there was no Occupy movement, but everybody was going home that day and looking at the thousands of people, invading an office.
You know, I get really angry at the media. I mean, we've got to wrap up the interview now, but I don't know. I had a thought, maybe I was just sleep deprived or something like that, but it'd be great to just take my big fat megaphone and a couple of cameras or something like that. And if the go to these big media hustle events and things of that nature, and just berate the media through the megaphone while they're trying to do their live broadcast and just ruin their day and just have fun at their expense. However, then that would cause me to get myself ostracized entirely from the media because they would all freaking hate me.
And that's what happened. I mean, I'm not a fan of the English art, which I know that you are, but I worked with them. And we had my first book went straight to the bestsellers list and was there for 6 months. We had a lot of trouble getting media acknowledgement of that story, even though I was getting huge numbers on the bestsellers list, simply because Ian Wishart had upset a lot of people personally in TVNZ, so nobody would allow him a fair shake of the stick. Again, everything in State Secret 1 back then was controversial and considered to be outrageously conspiracy theory. Now there's not anything, you could read that book today and you just accept this is life as normal. The one last thing I'll try and leave you with, Vinny, is that we did in February a story about how basically organised crime and dodgy elements were moving into the Octagon in Dunedin, and I basically put that out there and I did it on social media. And it was interesting because, first of all, the mainstream media ran stories in response that turned around and said, don't worry about gangs, they only hurt gang members, nothing to see, move along. Well, 2 weeks ago, we had a guy killed in the Octagon, beaten to death in the Octagon, and Now we're actually starting to get businesses within the Octagon and council action and police action starting to do all the things that we said beforehand. The reason why is that they've been embarrassed, but it took a person actually dying before anybody would actually listen to what I was actually warning them.
Yeah. Sounds about right.
Yeah.
Thank you, council. You're the Shiite Muslim.
Pretty much. Well, and the latest thing they've just turned around and done just is that they've turned around and given the Mongol mob and Black Power contracts to cut wood and mow the grass because that's easier than actually dealing with the gangs. We just pay them off and make them go away.
Yeah, well, I mean, because if anybody would know about cutting grass, it'd be somebody who sells it for a living, huh?
Well, and the thing is, you know, Muldoon did this back in the 80s. Honorary Black Power and Mongol mob member Robert Muldoon, Prime Minister of New Zealand, he originally provided the POP schemes, which actually provided the financial foundation for the growth of gangs in the first place. So, you know, paying gangs off is actually not the way to do it. The way to do it is actually get media attention, focus on it, put them in the spotlight, and they shrivel away and crawl away. However, our mainstream media actually are basically cowards and don't want to do that, so they would rather just pay them off and ignore them and carry on business as usual. But that doesn't work, and luckily there's enough people out there in alternative media doing what I'm doing, that we're just going to keep applying that pressure, create those media landmines so that the gatekeepers have no choice actually other than to report the stories, because the stories have actually already been, you know, blown up in their faces.
Coercion, ladies and gentlemen, it's not always a bad thing. Thank you very much, Ben, for your contributions today. And quickly fire off your website again for those who are
unfamiliar. Website is www.postmanproductions.org, or you can listen on to me on Wednesday nights, 8:30 on 105.4 FM or FM. It's Otago Access Radio. If you just Google Otago Access Radio, you'll find that they've got their own website. They've got a live stream, so you can just click on the top left of the page and you can actually listen in to me as you like, or come and visit my website, www.postmanproductions.org, and check out the podcast. But I said, the site will be back up next week. We're just doing maintenance on this week.
You've been listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We are sponsored by the Crowdfunding Revolution book, How to Raise Venture Capital Using Social Media, authored by Kevin Lawton. The Range of Illusion by B. Holmes. Also check out our affiliates, iFinity FM, Rush FM, and Dagsy FM. Sponsors the High Tea Cafe in New Lynn there, supporting a lot of cannabis law reform places around New Zealand as well at the same time. Very good people and person Jeanette there. And also the Gourmet Soap Kitchen in Wagga Wagga. I just love saying Wagga Wagga for some reason. But it sounds like a frog, you know. If you like go out in the middle of the Australian bush or something like that, you're near a billabong and you hear the frogs going wagga wagga. That's what it reminds me of. Anyway, we'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening.